this is Chris Bowen, and welcome to the Screencast, Something WCF This Way Comes. This was recorded as part of our Northeast MSDN Roadshow series in December of 2009, and is a focus on Windows Communication Foundation, introducing the concepts behind why it exists, getting you up to speed in creating a distributed application using WCF quickly, and then we'll also focus on some related technologies, including RESTful-based programming, some tools that you can use for WCF, and a glimpse into future directions for WCF with .NET 4. You can reach me at cbowen@microsoft.com, and through my blog, and through Twitter as well. First of all, why WCF? Windows Communication Foundation was introduced as part of the .NET Framework 3.0 release a few years ago, and it sought to unify the programming models that we have as developers for creating distributed applications. Now, before WCF, if you had to create a distributed application, you might turn to a variety of different technologies, from remoting to MSMQ to COM+ and ASP.NET with ASMX-based web services. Each of these things would be useful for creating these kinds of distributed applications, but they didn't share a programming model. So if you were really good at remoting, that didn't always mean that you could quickly dive into creating an ASMX-based web service. WCF introduced a unified programming model for us to learn once and to apply in a variety of different distributed scenarios. So you write the code, you learn how to use WCF, and then you use settings and configuration to determine how and when to use these other approaches for distributed applications. So let's begin with a quick look at the structure of a WCF application. Normally we talk about WCF, we talk about a service that's being provided and a client that's accessing that functionality. Now the client could be a client application, or it could also be another service. For example, we might have internally a service-to-service based communication, or company-to-company based on one machine calling another. We may also have a client application that's just simply calling into a service and using that functionality. Now, as you can see here, this is very complex, and I want to make sure this is very easy by showing you exactly what we're talking about here. Watch carefully. That's the important part right there. Messages going across the wire from the client to the service. Of course, that's incredibly simplified, and the whole point of this screencast is to dive into what's going on between the client and the service, and how that envelope is both created and sent back and forth between the client and the service. Okay, so enough with the slides for the moment. Let's actually go in and do a demo. Let's create a very basic WCF application. And to do that, I'll go into Visual Studio 2008 and create a new project. So File, New Project, and on WCF, there are several options available to us. We're going to focus on WCF Service Library, and I'll just choose the default name there and say OK. And it's going to go ahead and create several files for me. It's going to create configuration that we'll need. It's going to create some implementation code. And I'm going to walk through each of these in turn. We'll introduce some concepts as we go. But briefly, let me just show you around the Solution Explorer window. Let me zoom in up here. You can see what's going on. The first file that we see there is app.config. And that contains all of the settings that WCF will need to actually execute and host our service. The next file is iService1.cs, and that's an interface, or standard object-oriented interface, that we're using to define the functionality that we want to expose over this service. And finally, Service1.cs is the actual implementation of the service that we want to expose through WCF. So let me unzoom here. And let's go ahead and actually run the application. I'm going to hit F5 right now. And the first thing you'll notice is that it's going to start a WCF test client, and it will actually automatically begin hosting our application, hosting our service for us. At the very bottom of the screen there you see WCF SVC host, and that's the machine, the system just going ahead and hosting our service, creating the endpoint, and allowing us to be able to call into that service to get the functionality we need. The next thing it's doing is it's creating the WCF test client. And that's going to let us call into the service from a client perspective. So the test client has loaded, and you can see on the left-hand side, it's actually gone and found the place that we're hosting our service, the service description, the iService 1 is the interface, defining the contracts that we support, and I'll talk about all these things in just a little bit. And then within that particular service, it hosts two endpoints, two operations that we can access, get data and get data using data contract. I can actually click on one of these, double-click actually, and it will bring up an interface through which I can supply values over to that application, that service. Let's go ahead and just type in a value here. And again, this is all generated for us automatically. The WCF test client worked with the service to figure out what it required and what it sent back for us, all based on the standards that WCF supports. So I'll go ahead and click Invoke. And that's going to go ahead and generate that message. It's going to create the envelope. It's going to stuff all the stuff that we need inside of it. It's sending that across the wire to our service and then accepting the same another message in return, opening the envelope and then parsing out the results. And you can see at the bottom here, we entered the value of 100. We got back a string of you entered 100. Now, point out that this is actually a new feature with Visual Studio 2008. The WCF test client was added with that release. So if you had taken a look at WCF when it first came out, you would be doing this stuff manually. You'd have to create a test client, essentially, and then create a way to access the service in order to test it. I'm going to show you that as well, but the nice thing about this is that you don't have to do that to just do a quick test and evaluation of a service. It will automatically infer and create the things that you need to call that service. Let's go back to slides for a little bit. So you've seen a very basic demonstration of creating a WCF service in Visual Studio. Let's take a look at WCF in a little more detail. Now, extending that prior slide we saw before, we still have the client and the service, and what's interesting here is that messages are actually being sent between things called endpoints. Endpoints are a combination of different things that tell WCF how to communicate and the mechanisms by which a message should be transferred. I'll get into those details in just a little bit, but the most important part about this slide is to note that the service on the right-hand side actually has more than one endpoint. This is a very key feature of WCF. An endpoint, again, I'll describe this in detail in a moment, but really describes a scenario that you want to support for exposing the functionality that you have in WCF. So an example might be you want to create a web service for some given functionality, and you expose that through an endpoint. And then later on, your requirements change, and you want to expose that through a different mechanism. Maybe it's on the same machine or behind the firewall from a .NET to .NET machine. Maybe it's to a more interoperable standard format. These things are easily achievable by adding more endpoints to WCF. And the nice thing about this is that you're not rewriting your service to take advantage of a new way of exposing that functionality. So what are these endpoints? The endpoints are composed of A, B, and C. Address, binding, and contract. The address is pretty straightforward. It's really, where is the message being sent? Where does the service live? Is it on the web? Is it a given server with a port and a name? Is it using name pipes? In which case, how do you identify that pipe? MSMQ, various other ways that you can have to connect these various services together. The binding describes how you communicate. Now that you know where you're sending a message, let's describe what we should do to encode and to send this message across the wire to wherever destination is specified in the address. And finally, the contract describes what we're doing. What is the promise that the service is making? Does it require a certain input, and does it guarantee a given output, or will it return a data type that can be expressed in what we call a contract? And so we use contracts to define the what of our communication. So that's the A, B, and C, where, how, and what. And each endpoint has a variety of these settings to indicate the scenario that it supports and the specific endpoint that it's looking to work with. So let's take a look at bindings in a little more detail. This is not meant to scare you off, but really just to show you that bindings have a lot of flexibility, and you can change a variety of things to achieve what you need for a goal. Bindings can be composed of a variety of things. You see transport, encoders, and protocol. We'll go through each of these. Transport is simply, how do you want to send this message across the wire? We're using TCP, named pipes, peer-to-peer, some kind of custom mechanism. And in fact, you'll notice custom is available for each one of these sections. It's a very key feature of WCF as well. many things you can just use out of the box. You can configure things with built-in options, but you can also go beyond that and create your own custom options for a variety of things within WCF. Once we've said what transport we want to use, we can then say, well, what should the content be, and how should we encode that for transfer across the wire? We can use text, binary, MTOM, a variety of different encoders, including our own custom ones again, to actually pack that message together and send that across the wire. And finally, protocol indicates just some additional services that we might want to take advantage of as we're sending the message across the wire. Do you need secure secure transmission? Do you need reliable messaging? Do you need to make sure that that message got there? And if it doesn't, ensure that another message is sent to make up for that missing message. Transactions, TX. Do you need to be able to send a message off to one service and then, based on that result, maybe make us save something to a database? But only if both of them are successful do you want to commit that. So we can roll back or commit as we need to, including WCF endpoints. And again, custom options are there as well. Now this next slide just shows you some of the options that are built into WCF. There's actually a bunch more beyond what are on these on the slide, but it's just giving you an idea that with those various options within binding, you have various bindings that are built in that you can use that will enable or disable certain of those features. So take a look down the list. You can see a variety of things, maybe based on the kind of interoperability you need to support, web service standards. Maybe you have .NET on both sides, and you can take advantage of things like NetTCP or name pipes. Maybe you need different security options, transport and session-level security, support for sessions, transactions, duplex communications, and streaming. These will all lead you to certain sets of bindings that you can choose to use. Again, there are more than there are just on the slide, and you can use these as the basis for creating your own, or create your own bindings completely from scratch. So the final thing to talk about with endpoints are contracts. And contracts are the what of WCF. It describes what kind of data should be sent and how, what kind of operations can be performed, what to do when an exception occurs, when a fault has been thrown, and more. They really describe the promise that we're making in interacting with the service within WCF. As an example, here's an order class within .NET with a few properties and some methods that we'd like to enable to be used within WCF as a return value. Now, it's important to describe this in a way that could be useful outside of .NET, because in WCF's case, it could be exposed to something that isn't .NET on the other side. We need to use, say, web standards to convey that information. So we can use attributes within WCF to indicate our intent. And here's the order class, the very top of that middle pane, with a few attributes. A data contract saying this is a contract for a data entity. Within that, we're specifically saying which of the properties we'd like to expose and how. Within each of these attributes, there are more options that we can pass in as arguments to describe how we want these members handled and the contract as well. And if you look down the list, there's also a query class and an info class as well that have also been attributed to be used as data contracts. Now, data contracts are just one way of being able to communicate data across the wire in WCF. There are many options available to you with serialization. And the final pane here is talking about how to expose methods as operations that can be performed within WCF. Here, at the interface level, again, which is itself a promise of what kind of functionality is provided by another class, here we're saying that this interface defines a service. And within this, there may be more one or more operations that are exposed by WCF. So here there's the process and get info methods that have both been attributed with operation contract. And that's all WCF needs to go and take a look at that interface and expose those operations within WCF. So we've talked about endpoints with the address, binding, and contract, but there's another important aspect of WCF to cover, and that's configuration. Configuration is what we can use to be very flexible about specifying the scenarios that we want to support and the specifics of those scenarios. Now, I'm not going to cover how to write the XML and the very specific details of writing a configuration for WCF. I'm actually going to refer you to a tool that will help you to create and manage configuration much more easily. But I do want to point out the configuration that's on the slide. What you're looking at is configuration for both a service and for the client that's calling to a service. The top half of the configuration defines a service that we're exposing. And in fact, if you take a look under services, there's the service node right there with a given type defining what is the implementing class, in this case, hello service. Within that, you can see there's an option for, in this case, we have one endpoint, but we could have many more. But the endpoint has the ABC right there, address, binding, and contract. You can use that to specify all those things we just talked about in the prior few slides. Now, at the bottom of the slide, you'll see that there's another configuration, this time for client. And this would not normally be in the same configuration file. This is only an example on the slide. On the client side, we would have what looks like the bottom half. And within the client, we're again creating an endpoint. And this endpoint needs to match an endpoint on the server side that we wish to call. And again, you can see here the address, binding, and contract. These will all map and relate to one of the endpoints that exists on the server side. The great thing about configuration is that we can change the configuration to add on new functionality or change settings without having to go into code and make the changes, recompile, and redeploy the binaries to affect that change. So at this point, let's turn back to code and Visual Studio. In this demonstration, I want to show a few things: how to deal with configuration, and also how to deal with the unexpected, to trace and to use diagnostics that are built into WCF to help find where problems are being caused. This can be very important in WCF applications, especially as the number of services, number of machines, and in fact, in some cases, the number of companies that are involved grow. It can be very difficult to trace issues without some diagnostics, and I'll show you how to do that within WCF. So let's turn to Visual Studio. And at this point, let's just do a little refresher about the code that we have. We saw the contracts in one of the prior slides. Here's where that lives within the code that was generated for us by Visual Studio. You see we're within the namespace, WCF service library. Here's the interface that defines the code, or defines the operations that we want to expose. Not the implementation, that's going to live somewhere else. But here we're just defining lines 14 and 15. We're saying that there's a method called getData. It accepts integer, returns a string, and we're decorating that with the operation contract attribute to tell WCF that yes, this particular method within this interface is something we want to expose through WCF. And again, the service contract attribute on the interface is a flag to WCF to look more deeply into the interface to find these operations. At the bottom, you'll see a data contract. This is taking a composite type that we're using in one of the other operations above, and it's describing it in a way that can be useful when WCF is communicating with non.NET endpoints. So we're telling it, you may not know what a composite type is, and this is a way of being very explicit about what we want to expose when we return this type as a result from our method. So again, data contract telling WCF that this contains something that should be looked at in more detail. We're explicitly exposing a few things, some properties here, data members within this class. And that's all WCF will need to help take care of the rest. Now we can expose this composite type via the operation. Now let's take a look at the code that implements all of this. That's service1.cs. And so right here, it's actually very straightforward. Basic class, service1, that implements the interface iService1. So the promises that were made in the interface are fulfilled here. That getData method is right here. Takes the integer, returns a string, and it just is a very basic operation of creating a string based on what we entered and returning that. But you've already seen that in operation when we use the test client. This is just making sure that you understand how this stuff is all plugged together. And finally, there's the configuration that we use to drive the address, binding, and contracts within WCF, and a bit more that we'll get to in just a little bit. Let's go to Solution Explorer, and app config is right here. We can open this up and look at the XML, but I'm not going to focus on the XML today. Let's actually right-click on this, and you'll see an option, Edit WCF Configuration. Just click on that, and it will load the app config file, or web config, depending on where you are, into this UI that we can use to investigate and maintain the configuration for WCF. If you take a look on the left-hand side, we have service 1, we just saw that in code, has a variety of endpoints actually two. And that may be a little surprising because we haven't talked about why, there would be one that we want to use for the actual operation. It turns out there's another one that's being used to share information about the service that we can use to generate code, generate proxies. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But what we would care about here, I'm going to go and click on one of these and just show you that this tool is very nice for dealing with creating configuration. Here you can go through and see the address, behaviors, bindings, things like that. You can go through and just change this. So if you're not happy with WSHTTP binding, click the arrow. You can see there's a variety of other ones to choose from, including your own. If you add them either in the XML directly or via this tool, you'll see them in this list, and you can use those bindings for one or more endpoints within the service. But I'm not going to change anything here. What I do want to change is down in diagnostics. We'll click on this node, and you'll see that there's a variety of options that we can turn on, and it's actually not very hard to do this. What I want to do is turn on the logging of messages, so we'll say enable message logging, and the fact that we want to record trace events within WCF. So the first thing I did was enable message logging. These are the messages that are being sent to and from a service, or from a client's perspective as well. We turn on the fact that we want to see those, and that we want them to be logged to a given file. So you see here, there's a name of and a directory of where we're going to be putting this information. The second one I added was tracing. And tracing is built into WCF. It's basically describing what it's doing for us. It's saying, I'm opening a port, I'm listening, I've encountered a problem. These are things that WCF can tell us about, but only if we opt in to hearing about these things. So we can turn on tracing, and again, just like we did before, we tell that source to write to a specific listener, which is a log file right here, app trace log, service log file, and that's all we need to do. Now I can close this down and let it save, and if we run the application again, we can take advantage of that diagnostics and the tracing. Now, before I run this and show you how to work with the files that are created by the diagnostics and tracing, I want to show you how to create a very basic client application that uses the WCF service that we have right here. What we can do, I'm going to add a new project to the solution. And this can really be anything. In this case, I'm going to use a console application. And let's go up to Windows. Console app, we'll call this client. So, oops. Client, say OK, we'll have that added in for us. Now this client application is nothing more than a simple console app. It knows nothing about WCF, it knows nothing about our service. So how do we tell it about that service and about WCF? Well, we can go over to Solution Explorer again, and here, under References, actually on the client side, we can right-click and we can say Add Service Reference. Now this is different than Add Reference, which will be to an assembly, which we can use for .NET types, but in this case, I want to actually use a service. So we'll say add service reference, and this can actually discover the services that are available to us to work with. I hit discover, and it found that right here is WCF service library 1, the service library, the service 1 itself, and this looks like what we want. In fact, we can double click on that, we can open it up, and I'll show you this way. Open it up, and it's going to actually run the service so we can find out more about it. It's asking for information about the service. And we're going to see in a moment that within the service, there are the operations that we can call. And that looks just about right. Get data and get data using the data contract. So this looks fine. Let's go ahead and leave the name as is. I'll say OK. And if you look closely, you could pause this, take a look at the bottom of the screen. It's actually telling you what it's doing. It's actually calling out to a tool to help generate proxy code for us as it communicates to that service to find out more about it. Now, it's done, and for our client application, you can see that it's had a bunch of references added for us. System runtime serialization, data set extensions, things like that, service model. These are all very important to working with WCF, and they were added for us automatically. What is interesting, though, beyond that, is the service references node now has service reference 1 there for us. That's a combination of a couple of things. Really, that's code to help us call to that service, and it's paired with the configuration that's been added for us automatically in this app config file. So now I can just write code. So let's go ahead and here. and start writing some code. We're within the main method here, and I had created a proxy called service reference 1, and I can go within that, and what we want to do is use the client that's been created for us within that. So I can say, give me that client, so we'll call that client, and we'll just new that up. And we'll say new client service reference 1, service 1 client. That's great, it's all we need. I'll put this on a second line so you can see that there. And now I can just call this client, and it will offer me operations that are actually remote, that are actually WCF-based, but they look and feel like they're a local method within a regular assembly that I have within my program. So here's get data. I'm saying client, get data, open it up. I have help here to tell me it needs an integer. So we can pass in, say, 200, and we'll get a string back from that, as IntelliSense said. So what I can actually do is just write that out to the screen. I'll use console write line here. And let's go ahead and close that up. And I'll just do a console read key so we can keep that window open. And that's really all I have to do. I have created an instance of the proxy that will help me to connect with that service. I call through the proxy to a particular operation that WCF is exposing. And then the proxy takes care of the rest. It calls WCF, it deals with configuration, the ABCs, the endpoints, making the message, and getting the response back for us. So now if I ran the application, you'll see a simple console window, and it'll print out 200. It's all very exciting. But what I want to show you now, though, is that we can also turn on diagnostics on the client side. So let's do that right now. Let's go into the app config file on the client side. And while I'm here, I'll make this the startup project. App config right there, again, was generated for us when we added the service reference. But I can still right-click on it and say edit WCF configuration. This is going to use the same tool that we had used for the server side, the service side, to enable tracing and message logging. Let's do that again here. Here we're looking at the configuration in the editor. There are no services here, though. We are dealing with clients. So we are client-side, but the client-side, again, has an endpoint that itself maps to one of the endpoints on the server side. So they match up, they agree on the mechanics of how they'll communicate, and then WCF can take care of the rest. So here we have that specified, the address, binding, contract, they're all specified here. Again, we can go to diagnostics, and we'll just quickly turn on message logging. We'll turn on tracing. And while I'm here, let me point out a very important thing. The stuff you're seeing in this diagnostics area is just standard .NET stuff. It's based on .NET 2 system.diagnostics functionality. The concept of having sources and listeners is a very standard thing and something you can plug into as well. In fact, creating listeners that can work with WCF is a very simple thing. You just tell it, I'm going to take a message, and I'm going to write it here, I'm going to send an email, or I'm going to put it somewhere else. There are other listeners that you can use as well, like putting through the event log. There's other ones that you can download from the community, like rolling file listeners, and things like that. So it's all very flexible, and you can plug into this as you wish and as you need. Now that I've enabled both message logging and tracing, let's go ahead and close this down. And if we run the application, we'll actually get a result that saves the tracing into those files. So let's go ahead and run the application. You'll see the services hosted on the right-hand side of the screen at the bottom. The console application starts up, uses the proxy to send 200 across to the service, which then returns the string, you enter 200. And all the while, WCF's emitting information about the messages and the trace events that have occurred during the run of the application. And we've elected to plug into that and to write those contents to the files that we specified. Let's go take a look at those contents. If I go to Solution Explorer, let's look at the service itself, right-click, and say Open Folder in Windows Explorer. We'll bring that up. There's actually two new files here, appmessages.svclog and apptracelog. These are already associated to the viewer that I want to show you, so I can just double-click on the messages file, and that will bring up the Service Trace Viewer application. Again, built in and part of the SDK as well. I want to show you the message tab to begin. And here you can see there's actually a bunch of messages that were logged just in that brief time we ran the application. Most of these have to deal with the handshaking of the communications that are happening between the client and the service. Based on the binding and the choices that we made in the endpoint, those the versions and security and things like that need to be negotiated before the communications can get underway for the actual service invocation. And so you see here, all the messages are listed for us. You can go through each one and see the details for each one of those. And the details on the right-hand side include a few different views. So we can see a nice formatted view, which shows you the key information from each one of the messages. You can look at the XML, and also the message itself, and whatever you need to do to find the information you're looking for. This is, again, just the messages that were being sent, and again, just the view from the server side. What I can do now is add in the trace events that were also emitted as part of the run. Now, I can do File. Now, don't do Open, actually, unless you intend to replace what you're seeing with the contents of the next file that actually removes what you're looking at and loads the new file in its place. What we want to do is add. So I'll click on Add, and this will just add on the contents of what we have to that particular whatever you're seeing in the editor. So I'm going to go to the service library. We'll add the trace log and say open. And now you see a little bit more information on the right-hand side. That's WCF describing what it's doing. And now if I go back to the activity view, you can see a lot more information. Now we can see the messages that were being processed, the fact that bytes were being received, messages were being received, were listening on certain ports. These are all things that WCF emits as trace information. And again, you can click on each one of these and find the information on the right-hand side about what happened within that particular activity. So we've added the service perspective of what's been happening with messages and tracing. But we can also add the client perspective as well. So I can do that in a very similar way, just say File, Add, again, not Open. And we can go to the client directory within our project, within our solution. Here's the client directory. And again, we have messages and trace log here. I'm going to get an exception here that I'm going to skip. And let's go ahead and talk about what just happened here. We've added in now the client's view of the world from the messages that it sent and received, and the tracing that WCF on the client side did as well. This tool, the Service Trace Viewer, has coalesced those details together into one view. And what this enables now for us to do is to do things like this. I'm going to actually double-click on one of these actions. And it's going to show us what's called the graph view. In this case, on the right-hand side, we have the client view of the world, and on the left-hand side is the service view. The top, in swimming lanes, the columns here, are different activities that each side are performing. Opening a port, sending a message, receiving a message, things like that. And if you read down the list, you can see the specific actions that were taken as part of those activities. So, you can go down the list, and you can see various messages being created and sent. You can see the flow of those messages across the system. And if I keep opening things up, you're actually going to find that this will connect. The client side, perhaps there's more than one client, and perhaps there's more than one service involved, can be more easily viewed because we have a more visual tree here of what's happened and what led to some kind of action on another machine or in a service. So here, we can see we've begun listening on a port, we have messages coming in, and we can see that these are generally in response to stuff that's being done on the client side. The client does its work, sends the message, it processes it, and if there were any exceptions, you would see them here. You would see red highlights. I think I close everything down nicely, so I don't see any exceptions here, but you can see the details on the right-hand side, and just you'd see like a red X. You could click on it, you'll find more information. You can see on the right-hand side the exception details would be captured for you. And things like that. So you can go down the list, see activity boundaries, processing messages, very helpful things to help you diagnose what's happening in a distributed application. Now, I had mentioned that this is based on system.diagnostics core stuff from .NET 2. There's actually another thing that's happening here. The ability to correlate activities between a client and a service and so forth and so on is done by something called the Correlation Manager. If you take a look at any of these activities and click on the XML view, very closely here, you can take a look under the end-to-end trace event, which is actually a standard way of describing what's called end-to-end tracing. There's a node called Correlation Activity ID. There's a class within System.Diagnostics called Correlation Manager, whose job it is to help identify an activity and let things that are being traced contain that activity and really convey that activity ID throughout the process. So you can see that what began on the client side as creating a message is then propagated through other actions, both on the client and the service side. So you can trace that much more easily. That's, again, taken care of by standard stuff within WCF here, within .NET, but you can see that the magic is actually right there in the correlation activity ID GUID, which helps WCF to do the magic. So with that brief introduction to the Service Trace Viewer, I encourage you to take some time on your own to delve into some more of the advanced features of the viewer in terms of being able to filter and find your own content to plug into this event tracing system, the end-to-end tracing subsystem. You're going to find it's a very useful tool, especially as your applications become more complex. You involve more clients, more machines, even more companies. It'll be very useful to be able to trace when things may not be going the way that you'd expect them to, and to find out why and who's calling in what specific cases, with what data, and what the results were. This is going to be a very valuable tool for those cases. Let's switch back to slides. Now let's talk about something I glossed over a little bit. When I had created the client application, I had created a proxy, and I used the add service reference option to create code on the client side that I could use to work with the remote service. To do that, I took advantage of a second endpoint that the service exposes. I had mentioned it very briefly when we looked at the configuration editor, but the metadata exchange endpoint, or MEX, its job is to talk about the service and to tell usually other tools how and what kind of information it needs to be communicated with. And so it does this typically in something called WSDL, Web Service Description Language. And so on the client side, when we're in Visual Studio, we wanted to create a reference and call a given service. We said, add that reference, which then went out and found that endpoint, found the WSDL and the description of that service, and it used that information to generate via another tool, the proxy that we use now to write the code. The tool that was used, we didn't actually see it explicitly being used, is serviceutil.exe. Visual Studio calls out to that, and it uses that with the information it got from the service to generate both proxy code and the configuration that's used to map the endpoints to the service endpoints. Now, I should point out, serviceutil can be used within Visual Studio, but also externally, so you can use that as part of a build process if you wish. If you need to update a proxy on an automated basis, it's a great tool to be using for that. At the end of the day, you'll end up with some code that we just brought in and used as a local, it felt like a local assembly that just had methods that we were calling. What really was happening is we were calling those methods, and WCF took over and said, okay, you want to call this getData method, I'll create a message for you, I'm going to start communications with that service, and I'll get the response back from the service and take care of all the details for you. But from the client perspective, from a developer perspective, it was as easy as we could be. We created a proxy and just called methods. We should always be aware that we're calling to a service because there are implications for a variety of things, from service to performance to a lot of various things to keep in mind. But we do want that client development perspective to be as simple as possible, and that's what we see here. So the last of the core WCF concepts I want to cover is behaviors. And you can think of behaviors as just additional functionality that you'd like to apply to your services that you can configure and then bind to one or more of the endpoints that you're exposing. And by behaviors, I mean things like these features that you'll see here. You can specify, for example, concurrency options, how many instances of your service you'd like to have alive at any given point. Throttling could say, if I get more than X requests at a certain time, let's begin to throttle back our responses to them, queue them up, or maybe reject them entirely. You can handle faults and exceptions in specific ways. You can also use things like just-in-time activation, security options like impersonation, transactional support like auto-enlist and complete. These are all behaviors that you can specify. You can do this via code, or you can do this in configuration, again, by hand if you wish, or using the configuration editor tool that I had shown you earlier. But the idea, again, is say, I need these features, and I want to enable them on maybe all of the endpoints, maybe only certain ones. So for example, you may need only to have security on a few of the endpoints that you have. Maybe they're external. And then the internal ones don't have that same behavior applied to them. Or you don't throttle the ones that are internal, but you do throttle the ones that are external. These are completely up to you. You can apply them. And for the most part, it is configuration driven. And again, like I had mentioned before, if you don't have or see a behavior that does what you want, you can customize them. You can add your own in a very straightforward way. Let's focus now on some related topics to WCF. The first is REST, Representational State Transfer. And you may have worked with SOAP already, Simple Object Access Protocol. And that's actually what I used for the demonstrations you've seen in the screencast. SOAP is a way to specify messages and the composition of messages that a service can receive and send. And it can support a wide variety of scenarios and functionality. Now, with that support comes a bit of complexity. And so REST takes a different approach. It focuses on being as simple as possible and focuses on data. So it uses standard web browser verbs like get, post, and delete, etc. To work with data. So you might get a product by ID, you may update an existing order, or you may post something that's new as well. But the focus is usually on data items rather than on calling methods like process or something. We added support for REST with WCF in .NET 3.5 for the server side, and there's more functionality to help making WCF clients in SP1. If you go to the WCF homepage, which is msdn.com/WCF, you'll find a lot of information there, of course. But within that, there's a subsite, /REST, that will give you plenty of information about learning about why REST is important, why you should understand that. And amongst the things you can get is a preview of the WCF REST Starter Kit. If you download this, you'll get some new templates inside Visual Studio that can help you to create RESTful services and RESTful clients in a fairly easy way. So I encourage you to take a look. And the reason you might want to understand REST is because it's being adopted more and more on the web because of its simplicity. It's a nice way to encourage developers of other services and other applications to tie into your data, to call your services to get data without having to go through the complexity that might be involved with a SOAP-based API. So just have it as another tool. There's no reason to throw SOAP away, but having REST as an available option is something that's important, and so definitely check that out. I want to make sure you're aware of the CCR and DSS Toolkit, another option for you. Long name, Concurrency and Coordination Runtime, and the Decentralized Software Services, originally was part of the Microsoft Robotics Developer Studio, but it's been useful enough outside of the industry of robotics that it's being exposed as its own toolkit, useful for creating decoupled data-driven applications, taking advantage of decentralization, concurrent multi-core systems. Worth looking into. Go to microsoft.com/CCRDSS. I'll conclude the screencast by taking a brief look at what's new in .NET Framework 4 for WCF. The first is simpler configuration. There are more defaults built into WCF's configuration, and that will help you to create a shorter and more easy to maintain and create configuration files. There are also improvements to both the runtime and the designer experience in WCF 4. And I think one of the more important features in WCF 4 is service discovery. And this will help you to create both clients and services that use other services that can be more dynamic. I'll give you an example. You could write a client that needs to do logging, but instead of making a hard association reference to a given service, you could say, I need logging functionality, and here's the kind of functionality that I need. Here are some parameters that describe the logging that I need. Go and find the current services that are available now that can perform that functionality, and let me know what they are. The client can then bind to one of those matching services and dynamically use that functionality. This is great because it also leads toward being able to create self-healing applications. So if you found more than one service that can do functionality that you need, if one of them goes down, you can fail over to another service and continue on and help to minimize interruption to either a service that you're providing or a client that you've written. Finally, there are major improvements to workflow integration. Workflow is a very natural fit for WCF because you would want to, in many cases, expose a workflow as a WCF endpoint, so you could call that as a service. And you may also want to call WCF services from within a workflow. Now, you can certainly do this within .NET 3.5. It's just that there are more improvements to make that easier going forward into .NET 4. More activities, better support in the design, the designer in Visual Studio, just better ways to be able to make that integration happen. That was a major focus in both workflow and WCF, and you'll see that in both Visual Studio 2010 and .NET Framework 4. Also coming in the next wave of technology is Windows Server App Fabric. This was renamed as of PDC from its codename of Dublin and includes other features from something called Codename Velocity. The idea behind it is that it can be used to host workflow and WCF services, and you can add on a bunch of stuff like monitoring, reliability, routing, workflow persistence, and things like that, and it just works. It's a very simple environment for adding on that functionality. I had mentioned discoverability on the prior slide. This will help you to wire up discoverability and self-healing, things like that, for your WCF-based applications. So another thing to keep in mind as you're looking to what's coming down the road. I want to wrap up by giving you some resources here. Again, the WCF developer home, msdn/WCF, and the REST subsite of that. A couple of podcasts, Endpoint TV, and 10.4. Endpoint TV is focused on creating distributed applications, primarily on WCF, and 10.4 is focused on Visual Studio 2010 and .NET Framework 4. The next two links are for training kits. These are excellent resources for getting up to speed in either environment, Visual Studio 2008 or 2010. It includes presentations, hands-on labs, various other things like samples that will help you to get up to speed in whichever environment you're looking to learn more about. And finally, I couldn't spend much time talking about the .NET Framework 4 stuff, but I do encourage you to take a look at the PDC site, Microsoft PDC 09. If you just go to microsoftpdc.com, you can access all the recordings and session resources from all the sessions, even if you weren't an attendee. Also, we're going to be covering more of the .NET 4 and Visual Studio 2010 content in future roadshows, so keep an eye on the Northeast portal for more screencasts and more resources from our future events. With that, thanks very much for joining the screencast. You can always reach out to me with any questions you have, cbowen@microsoft.com. Thanks again.